Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Dan Durkin.
Hello.
And joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello there.
Because we need to talk about the day, the game of the day, you might say. Let's talk about Palworld. As of recording a big old... We're going to dive into all sorts of things in regards to the way the game actually plays. I get the divisive response. I recruited Mr. Dan Durkin in here because, like me, he's also sick in the mind and he's been playing a bit of Palworld.
Loving it.
So we thought we'd talk about that more than a bit. But however, the thing that's breaking at the minute is that Nintendo have finally acknowledged it, putting an official statement out by the Pokemon Company, saying, "We have received many inquiries regarding another company's game released in January 2024. Not going to use its name. Don't want to address it. We have not granted any permission for the use of Pokemon intellectual property or assets in that game. We intend to investigate and take appropriate measures to address any acts that infringe on intellectual property rights related to the Pokemon. We will continue to cherish and nurture each and every Pokemon and its world, and work to bring the world together through Pokemon in the future." There's a bit more to this in terms of a response over on the Pocket Pair side, the developers of Palworld. But obviously the big conversation in this is how much Pokemon is in Palworld. Dan Durkin, you've played quite a bit of it, including myself, but thoughts on this whole thing?
So, yeah, I went at this one, like, not really expecting it to be good, but oh my god, blown away by it. Like, it's really janky, like, don't get us wrong, it's really, really janky, but as far as gameplay goes, it's so fun. It's so, so fun.
I feel like that is true that, and it's very much the thing that Takeru Mizobe, the CEO of Pocket Pair, has said, where he's like, "I just wanted to bring a bunch of trendy, bankable elements, gameplay ideas together," and it's very nakedly that. You and your thoughts on this entire debacle.
Well, you've not led with the fact that you yourself, Scott, are having a great time of it. Noted, documented now in the public record on social media that you are a Palworld enjoyer. But for me, I'm struggling to chemically understand how you like this game, because, as you just said, it is nakedly, brazenly just hopped on every single trend you can think of and defiled the Pokemon image. And I'm not a Pokemon adult, so I actually have no skin in this game. I don't know why I'm getting worked up over it. But the whole thing of, like, we're going to give guns to the Pokemon and then we're going to put in some Minecraft and a bit of Roblox and a bit of crafting survival.
That will make all the money.
A bit of Fortnite and everything. It is just like we've smooshed every single thing into one game, and I think it looks terrible.
I think the whole Pokemon with guns thing is just like the big headline to draw you in. It's like,
yeah, it's definitely
there's
not
a lot
that.
More than that if you actually like play it, but
I think as well, like, that whole idea, and I'll bring in some quotes from Mizobe himself, but yeah, that whole idea of, like, look at what it's doing to the Pokemon name. Game Freak and Nintendo have shot it all over their own name with Scarlet and Violet anyway. That was an abysmal release. And Pokemon Arceus wasn't very well put together either. I think part of the general response to this has been from Pokemon fans who have wanted better from Game Freak for quite some time. It obviously, they're all separate conversations. It doesn't mean that the idea of cribbing ideas is what anyone wants from an artistic medium. But at the same time, it's cool just seeing a World of Pokemon idea done with a bit of satisfying gameplay or a stable frame rate or like the bare basics that we didn't get in Scarlet Violet.
I think the most instructive thing from this for Nintendo would be to you just need to make a proper open world Pokemon game that doesn't play like ass. And yeah, actually, like, the other thing as well is that people who like Pokemon, who grew up with it, maybe don't have a Switch or haven't played like a proper mainstream Pokemon game in years, so that's probably another reason why Pal World's taking off. And maybe Nintendo look at the sales numbers here and go, well, estimating how many, you know, how many Nintendos does Pokemon sell,
yes,
versus how much revenue could we gain from maybe having it be timed exclusive, and, you know, especially on the PC side of things, like what this is like now in the top three of all time played.
It was number six last I checked.
Yeah, so it's yeah, you know, it's mad. But yeah, at the same time, I just look at it and I just think this is everything I hate about games, and especially when you roll in the accusations over like AI and, you know, ripping things from Nintendo. As much as Pokemon fans are annoyed or can be annoyed with how Nintendo has, you know, done the series or in recent years or whatever, I just find this whole thing like it just strikes me as like a very retrograde, edgy, late 2000s internet humor idea that yeah, it's pitiable that this thing is like got as much traction as it has. And this isn't me dunking on you guys, I just think in general I find it really weird that in 2024 the thing that has gotten everyone really, really hyped is transparently Pokemon inspired gun survival Minecraft game. Like, Minecraft was a hit 10 years ago. Fortnite was a hit though. Fortnite is still, yeah, they're both still ongoing, but we had these quote-unquote breakthroughs an entire console generation ago, two console generations ago. It just feels like this is an exemplification of how myopic trends have become now. I feel like we're getting less innovation from the things that are becoming most popular.
I've got a question.
True.
Like,
yes,
do you see this game being as popular in 6 months' time? Like, straight up?
No.
For me or you? Oh, you.
I mean, I'm gonna say no. I think people will be bored by this in 6 months' time. I don't think it's like the studio is not big enough to sustain it as a live service, I don't think.
They've just put out like a roadmap. Their immediate thing was they want to fix bugs and issues and obvious stuff. There are like obviously frame rate issues and things like that. Very, you know, polished stuff that does come from the fact that they're a tiny team. It's a team of about 40 people. And so yeah, they've put a roadmap out saying that this is what we're gonna aim for going forward, and they want to have new islands and new pals to catch and things like that. So they're aiming to have it to make it last long. I think it'll go as long as it takes for Nintendo to stimmy up a decent response, and then whatever their response is, like, they're not going to put Pokemon on Steam, and if they do, that'll be a seismic thing and hilarious if it comes from this. You're not going to get that audience to go back over to the Switch and then play on worse hardware, and then unless the game itself is like incredible, which there was a thing literally before we started recording, a comment from Andy Robinson over on VGC saying that internally he's heard that Nintendo/Pokemon company are taking it very seriously, and they are like aware of the response to Scarlet Violet, which was fundamentally a terrible product. Like, it was, like I said, it ran like hell. They barely fixed it. The frame rate, once you got past anything in the that was close up, was like single digits. It was really, really abysmal. And I think that was, and that, but then that still sold the most. So it was like that thing of like, well, what can we get away with? And so I think a lot of the Palworld stuff is kind of rooted in that. And I think Palworld's kind of come to represent this, like, opposing, this is what you guys could be doing.
Can I say something, you know, really, really mean?
Please do.
Right, so you know how Disney adults get really, really upset about like ride changes at Disney parks? When adult Pokemon fans get upset about new Pokemon game releases, it's the exact same energy for me. There we go. That's it. So when everyone's getting really worked up about Palworld being like, oh, I'm sticking it to Nintendo, man, they gave the Pokemon guns. Yeah, this is both Nintendo's fault.
I see you in. Imagine if there was a comic book game that came out that was just really, really bad, and like, how would that make you feel?
I mean, I've seen many bad comic book video games, but I'm not begging for like. But this is it dives into the edgy, insincere aspect of stuff that I don't enjoy. That is my one mean take. I don't mean to insult Pokemon adults, or maybe I do just a little bit.
I think Multiple parts of that are true. I don't think that if you're actually serious living your life to campaign against Nintendo and Palworld is your tip of the spear, then no, it's probably not the best way to go about your day. However, it just does brazenly represent a version of, you know, those game mechanics that is just done better. And I think but even then, there is that conversation on how much Pokemon is in Palworld. And to be honest, after a whole day with it yesterday, very little, I would say. Yes, you're capturing monsters and everything, but you're not figuring out like types and weaknesses and turn-based battles and whatever. It's way more about survival mechanics and base building and like combat, like third-person combat. I did want to bring in, though, another thing that's in regards to this whole situation is that Nintendo have issued a DMCA takedown of a Pokemon reskin mod across the week, which is the immediate thing that made them jump in. Because obviously that
tweet was amazing. Nintendo have come for me.
I know. The whole thing, I feel like we've been covering Power Wolf like a month, but it's only been a week. But it's like every day there's been something else to this. So yeah, Nintendo have got involved a couple of times across the weekend when it initially blew up last Sunday. They did tweet out a video for Scarlet and Violet trying to remind people that the game had cool hidden features in it. It looked terrible, but that was hilarious. All the comments were like, we're playing Power World. Later in the week, they issued a DMCA takedown of a Pokemon reskin mod, which makes complete sense. Obviously, that's a direct asset rip thing. You're going to want to claim that if you're the copyright holder. And then we also have, it's worth throwing in, that Pocket Pair, which is the developer of Power World's CEO, Takeru Mizobe, has said that the game has undergone legal reviews with no specific actions taken by other companies, and he was asking people to please give the game a chance. So where we are right now is Nintendo is saying they're going to be investigating this. They're aware of the game. They cite it as just the game that was released in January 2024, which is probably a legal thing anyway. And we'll see how it shakes out. It is worth saying that in regards to the two biggest conversations that happened across the week in regards to, you know, the game being AI generated, the AI side of things, that was bolstered by someone sharing wireframe meshes of the models in Pokemon next to the Power World models and saying, look, they're exactly the same. That creator over on YouTube has now admitted that was fake and they just did it because they hated the game.
Oh,
so that
God.
Side of it is absolute BS. So it's like there's a whole mess of mismarketing and mismessaging in regards to how much of Power World has been a push generate game button, which was never the case in the first place.
What
there
about,
is a lot of, you know, ire against the game, but that's why.
Like that Twitter thread, I assume you've seen it, where there's a big bunch of like Pokemon compared to the Power World pals or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And you can see certain assets, especially I think it's the Galarian Meowth one. It's
literally the face
is just being like transferred over onto this pal.
There's the one where like there's a Sobble fin looks exactly the same as something that's in pal as well. Yeah, I don't know how each bit of that's going to shake out, but the main creator that did that video that said, hey, look at how similar these are, that person has specifically admitted to lying about it. So
we're,
it's like, great.
Going to get such a good, really crappy, straight-to-streaming video dramatization movie about the creation of Pal World and the ensuing legal courtroom drama that ensues.
I would point everyone towards the Automaton website. There's a website called Automaton Media that did an interview with Takeru Mizobe where he talks about, you know, the last few years of game development, how they, when they started the game, obviously they were working on things like Craftopia as well, but when they had the idea for Power World, their team size was about 3 to 4 people. And they recruited, like, it was a student coder who used to work at, like, a store that they were friends with, and it was a tiny little team and got bigger and bigger across the last few years to the point where now, obviously, it's blown up and everything. But he talks about where they came from, the way that the game was brought together, the team size, and he's extremely brazenly honest, which I think is the through line thing here, about just saying, I didn't care about originality, I just wanted to make trendy bankable game mechanics. And it's not that I want that for the medium overall, but we see that in the AAA space. We're about to see it again in Suicide Squad, and it's like the general level of hate towards Power World. I think it should be a wider conversation, like, do people actually want the bankable mechanics or not? The sales very much say yes. But it's just a weird thing when someone says, like, yep, that's exactly what we did. And then it's like, okay, I guess that kind of sucks, but it plays well. So it's just a weird reality at this point.
I guess, yeah, they're being honest about it. Like, compare that to the vibe I get from the Suicide Squad Insider stuff, which comes across so disingenuous to me as being like, we've made the most unique, special, unique game. You've never played a game like this before. Game. Compared to just nakedly being like, no, we just took everything that's currently trendy and we put it in here.
Yeah, and you've got a dude, Mizobe himself, saying like he like loves and respects Pokemon, like grew up with it, and he cites always like loving. You can look at the amount of things this game's taken from, and I don't think it should set some new standard for the industry itself, which is going to be the fascinating part coming out of this. What are the lessons that the industry's going to learn from this, and will we get a ton of extremely obvious? You know, I remember when it happened with Fortnite, where you had Epic got out there, the first video that came alongside Fortnite, Dirk, and you might remember, where they were like, we're just fans of PUBG, so we did one on consoles.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, that was kind of the Pal World of its day, and then Fortnite became this humongous thing. But, I mean, yeah, I guess closing thoughts, Mr. Durkin.
At least Pal World doesn't have a battle pass, and it's not overly monetized. Yeah. That's one good thing it's got going for it.
Very true.
Yeah, I'd say if you're a fan of Pokemon who's a little bit like sick of the formulaic gameplay that Nintendo have been putting out with that, I'd say give Palworld a try, because I went in very skeptical, and like, I'm a huge Pokemon fan and I've been enjoying it. Like, it's just fun. It's just fun.
Yeah, I'll just quickly say as well that when I went in, I think the game makes a terrible first impression. Like, when I first went in, I thought it was every bit the thrown-together asset grab that it was being painted as earlier in the week. And then when you spend a bit more time with it, you do realise the unlocks mean a lot, and the creatures that you're getting unlock more for your bases and everything. And there is a satisfying loop there. you in closing thoughts?
I just don't like the idea of, like, indenturing Pokemon into labour, into forced labour.
No.
Like, it's just so funny. I saw Dunkey's video on it the other week, which, again, you know, you... the way he frames games, you have to like kind of take it with a pinch of salt sometimes. Yeah. But the way that went about it was so funny to me. Just like, I'm gonna beat this Pokemon half to death, steal its essence.
You get lamb chops off the sheep Pokemon or whatever.
You get fluids as well.
It's every dark, edgy thought that someone had about Pokemon when they were about 10. Like, yeah. You know, it's not for me.
It's not even when they were around 10. It just is. It's still in the Pokemon fandom. Like, if you know the Vaporeon discourse, that's a very specific thing. That's a whole thing. It's like, that's out
there.
That's
going to be the hot coffee DLC, mate.
Ooh. Well, they've already got, I forget the name of the Pokemon, I call it Pokemon Pal in Pal World, that you can find that just, there's a sexy style Pokemon that they're trying to get out there. And I was like, this is the line. This is where I get off. And I mean step off. I don't mean
get off.
I'm going to ride it all the way through. But we'll see how the year pans out. Next up, let's talk about Helldivers 2. Just, we thought, why not weigh in? Mr. Ewan, you've pre-ordered the game. He's excited about it.
Look, I've just been in a Paul Verhoeven headspace recently. I watched Showgirls on the big screen at the start of January, and then I rewatched Starship Troopers the other week, and all the while, Helldivers 2 trailers. You know, that's a thing that leans heavily into Starship Troopers. Kind of, you know, the whole satire farce element of like, here's this neo-fascist future militarized society where we kill bugs and don't question authority. and I've just been completely won over by its presentation, because I think visually it looks really, really nice. It's a first-party PlayStation 5 title. Mm-hmm. I think I'm really after a Leave My Brain at the Door co-op game. I've not had one of those in a while, and this has kind of given me... some Lost Planet 2 vibes in terms of the approach to gameplay, which I remember having a lot of fun with. Maybe the maneuverability mechanics won't be as fun as like using the grapple hook in like Lost Planet 2 or whatever.
Getting your Tang.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Tang that you got in that
game?
Yeah.
But this just looks really fun. I like the tone that they've gone for. I think the community building aspects of it. There was a new trailer that came out this week about the Galactic War, where it's stuff like you get given individual challenges, but there's seasonal things, and the developers, Arrowhead Games, will then mess with that overall. Mm-hmm. So you might be doing something, and then the main story will be influenced by the fact that not enough players managed to take on the bugs on this planet, so you've got to, like, pull back or whatever. It just looks really fun, and gameplay-wise, it's leaning into the chaos of stuff. Like, there's friendly fires on all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm also excited by the fact that it is PS5 and PC... day and date, because that means that I get to play with my mates who are on PC. So it is basically doing that. I mean, I'm on like nearly on 1,000 hours on Hell Let Loose now. And that game, with the Game Pass influx recently, it's been great because new players, busier servers or whatever, but a lot of people who aren't accustomed to the tactics of that game. And in the evenings, I'm looking for something that maybe requires less tactical nous and crying for someone to put their supplies down so I can build a garrison.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Duncan, what do you think about the way that it's kind of rolled out? I want to get to the fact that no one's actually played it. It hasn't been previewed meaningfully. It's kind of just on. It's coming out in a bit.
Yeah, it's one that's flew under my radar. I don't even particularly know what like type of game it is. Like, what is the gameplay loop you in?
It's basically third-person co-op shooter where you basically pick... You play as a Helldiver who is just this soldier in this futuristic society that is taking on various threats, one of whom is like a uprising of bugs that you've been stealing their juice from for ages, and they've risen up. There's like air, like automatons and stuff. And you basically just go to different planets, complete objectives, kill bugs, try and survive, extract with some things, get to customize your own character, you know, down to like different weapons and visual aspects. It's everything you're familiar with from a live service game.
Yeah.
You could look at it as being quite Destiny-esque in terms of you go to planet, you shoot things, you get rewards, you come back and then progress. But the things that I'm interested in is just the tone and the presentation. Like I've gone on about it before. Like I love I love games that lean into cinema, and this is so nakedly doing the whole Starship Troopers thing.
The
movie. So I can't wait to do. I can't wait to do my part to quote Starship Troopers.
So, yeah. I do think it's worth throwing in that, like, obviously this is the first, new-gen third-person shooter that they've really put some money behind. In terms of the way that it looks like it is this big, like, mashup of physics models, and there's absolute chaos in a lot of the gameplay footage that's out there. I think it's weird the way they've rolled it out. I think your average person doesn't even know it's coming out. The fact that Dirk and you didn't even know, like, what the gameplay was, is that speaks volumes to me.
I've heard more about Foam Stars than this.
Yeah, there's barely any. If you look at the trailer numbers on PlayStation's YouTube channel, it's barely scratching the 150,000 mark on some of the recent ones. Like, it is a game that they are struggling to get out there, which is annoying, because the first Helldivers was a cult success. Like,
it was cool. I like the first Helldivers,
and it was on PlayStation Plus for a while, so also I think people got it as a free game. It's just one of those where it's not a recognizable brand name. They've got Helldivers 2 here, and it's completely pivoted genres. So that's probably maybe slightly prohibitive to people, but hopefully if it's good word of mouth will maybe uptick interest. I think it's just one of those where I look at it and I'm like, this just looks like a fun time to me. And the price point as well is really accessible. It's only £35. It's not going to be a £70 to £80 game. So it's got that going for it too.
I imagine they'll try and do with this what they failed to do with Destruction All-Stars, where it's like have like a first party, live service, multiple seasons of content type game, because that was in theory what that game was going to be. But the monetization of it was just terrible. You got one chapter of the story for free, and then they monetized the story after that, and it was like, this is terrible. Plus, like, the meat of that game was just so repetitive and pretty empty. Whereas, I guess on paper, Helldivers seems like it'll have more to it if it's anything like the first one in terms of the power ups and everything. But I'm just curious. Like, I've got the release date down as the 8th of February, so it's 2 weeks away. And maybe they'll just ramp things up. Maybe they'll do a state of play or something, and it'll be like Helldivers is everywhere or something. But I feel like they are dropping the ball in regards to just what this is, and like, you know, encouraging people to play it. And I wonder if it gets a PS Plus release, like Dirk and you just said, like Foam Stars is going to get that. And it's just weird because I feel like there's a bit more goodwill towards Helldivers, but it's being left to the side, and no one seems to care about Foam Stars, but that's going to be in front of you anyway if you've got PS Plus.
So with it being a £35 game as well, I wonder how they're going to handle like the monetization aspect of it, because this sort of thing works if it's on PS Plus or if it's free to play, but is it going to have like a battle pass that you have to also pay for on top of that? Like,
I've not seen any battle pass stuff so far. I know that they're talking about doing like seasons of content or stuff, but I've not seen anything about this that feels like it's aggressively trying to tap into that monetizable space yet. No. There are already pre-order bonuses. There's a Super Citizen Edition that you can get, which I think comes with some unique perks or whatever. But I think from so far, again, I haven't like looked into their post-seasonal content plans, which maybe is ominous, I don't know. But from the looks of things, it doesn't look like it's going to be aggressively, you know, you're going to have to buy this to do this. Because I think, you know, we've already, game developers have learned over the past 20 years of live service games, and well, what we would have referred to as live service games back in the day, that you don't fragment your player base, especially if it's a, you know, niche sounding game like Helldivers 2, even though it's cultivating those more widely, you know, approachable tropes. It's still not a big name.
No, definitely. And it's just like, I think it's going to have to like fight. It's going to have to swim by itself. Like, I feel like it doesn't have the marketing behind it. I have this theory where you looked at the Jim Ryan era of PlayStation. It's coming to an end. Like, I think it's next month he's retiring, or it's very, very soon anyway. And I feel like you had all these games that were greenlit on the live service end. And he was the guy being like, we're going to have 15 live service games by 2025. And then it was like all the response to Foam Stars and Fair Games and the Concord and all these live service little trailers they put out there, and bits and pieces, we're all largely met with like meh, and like this isn't really what we want, and this isn't really the future. And you can kind of see the corporate side of it. Well, what if we had 15 Fortnites? We'd make all the money and whatever. And I feel like that's kind of all gone sideways, and now he's stepping down and he's framing it as a retirement. I personally just think he's like, I can't make this work, so I'm gonna have to step away. And they had to revise their live service projections. I think they're going for, I think it's 7 games now or 8 games in total, rather than the proposed amount that they had. But I just look at Helldivers 2 and I'm like, this was greenlit during that era, and you probably had a bigger idea of what this thing was going to be.
Yeah.
And then, like, I think it'll work out for the consumer, because I think the version we're going to get will be the version with all of the monetization stripped away. It reminds me of when they tried to do their NFT platform, and then NFTs went so sideways that they just called it, it was still called PlayStation Stars, but you know, you're just getting free digital things and you're unlocking them based on trophies. And it was like, oh my God, we almost stepped on this landmine, but let's just not do that and let's do something else. I think Helldivers, for the price point, will be a solid third-person multiplayer shooter. And if it's good enough, they'll monetize it more. But I think what we're getting is the remnants of an idea that was put in motion last year.
Yeah, I mean, Arrowhead aren't the biggest game studio going, correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, I know people who enjoyed the first Helldivers speak really highly of them. And that game certainly obviously is a different scope, but was never aggressively kind of put into that same bracket. I don't know, I'm not getting the same vibes as this is a lingering afterthought of the Ryan era, just because it is so compact. But maybe you could say that maybe they readjusted expectations during development. But it just, for me, it has always looked like it's going to be just a fun little time. And sometimes that's what we need. You know, going off the back of last year when we had such a great time with RoboCop, Scott, I'm just kind of looking at this. I'm like, this feels like a similar I Know What I Am game.
I hope so.
And I, as someone who hasn't really had, I'm always going to champion co-op games when they're not frustrating to play, and actually give me some of those classic vibes. And if this can deliver that, then it's going to be a regular in my rotation. And again, I didn't expect to be going into 2024 being like, oh my God, I'm so excited for Helldivers 2. But what can I say? I've been won over by everything. I did the done thing and pre-ordered. So I will let you know if I live to regret that decision. But for me, it looks like it's going to be fun.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I think also as well, like, you know, I mentioned the PS Plus stuff because I feel like Sony could do with a series of first-party shooters just available when you get the console. Like, if you get an Xbox, you get Game Pass, you get Halo. And it's like, you have some past examples of that. And I was never really a big Killzone fan, but something of that level, you know, like in terms of a household name or whatever. And Helldivers could potentially be that. But yeah, maybe they'll hopefully kick marketing into gear across the next few weeks, but we'll see. Next news item down is a new version of 2015's Until Dawn. Apparently has been in the works for over a year. This is according to DealLabs.com, who also leaked the name of Death Stranding 2. Death Stranding 2 is apparently called On the Beach, which is a great little name. Don't know why, but Kojima. So we're getting Death Stranding 2 on the beach. Apparently there's an announcement for that is imminent. The leaker predicted within 15 days. But DealLabs.com are also saying that this Until Dawn version has been in the works for about a year or so, and it's going to be tying in with the Until Dawn movie that was recently announced over on Sony Pictures. And it's meant to be bringing the game to PC, and assumingly there'd be a PS5 version as well. So I routinely play Until Dawn. I love this thing. I don't know how much you two have both played,
yeah,
I played it. But I absolutely love it. I think it's one of the best first party, one of the best PlayStation exclusives ever. And if I was going to do anything to it, I would just kind of upgrade the graphics a little bit. It's in terms of the choices and the story and everything, I think it's pretty solid. But Ewan, what do you think?
This is a weird thing for me, because first of all, making an Until Dawn movie is removing the only impetus you had for that story, which is the unique decision-oriented aspects. Like, you're a game that is inherently relying on the tropes of horror and kind of deconstructing them and playing with them around. Yes, you can probably get a decently entertaining film out of that. But the main draw was always the fact that you were in control of everything. You could choose who lived and who died. So that in itself is strange to me. It's also telling for me that this is happening, because I agree with you. I'm totally down for an Until Dawn, you know, remaster, a little upgrade or whatever, because that game does rock. But it is slightly, maybe potentially, an indictment of how the other, you know, sequels from Until Dawn Studio, I've forgotten the name. Supergiant, Supermassive, is it?
Yeah, Supermassive.
Supermassive Entertainment, is it?
Yeah, yes. Supergiant are the other guys.
Or Supermassive, I can't remember, because I feel like Supermassive is the Ubisoft people, isn't it?
Supermassive Games are the dudes that make this.
Okay.
And then Supergiant are the dudes that do Hades and all that kind of stuff.
So maybe, you know, they've done other games that are like Until Dawn. You know, the other year we had The Quarry. It's just interesting that none of those took off in the way that Until Dawn did, and I wonder if Until Dawn benefited from all that early PlayStation 4 momentum, and because it was one of the early exclusives for, that was 2015, 2014?
2015,
so that had it going for it as well, so... Yeah, it's a shame that it's not really like the sequels and spin-offs, which I know have some of them have been more positively received than others. But it is interesting that they're going back to this one rather than doing a sequel, which I guess maybe has had diminishing returns. I don't know.
I'll pass this over to you, Durkin, in a sec. But like, I think with Until Dawn, it's interesting because they had Hayden Panettiere and Rami Malek and like a couple of other actors who would go on to do awesome things on TV and everything. And I don't feel like they ever got anyone who like, because obviously Hayden Panettiere really known for Heroes, and it was like you kind of had a bit of a
Scream
like 4. A star pull. Scream like later on, and it's like I would hope they get them back at least for the movie, or if you're gonna do additional scenes in Until Dawn, you can maybe bring them back or something. But yeah, I wonder how much that contributed to this idea of like a playable movie, because you literally had people who were on screen at the time, whereas like Supermassive over the years have never really tapped back into that, even though they do cast known people. I don't know, for whatever reason, Until Dawn felt like a bit more of a known thing. But Dick, what do you think?
I was confused when they announced the movie. Like, I'm not going to lie. It's like the game is pretty much a movie. But like, are they going to bring the actors back, do you think? Like, surely.
I hope so.
Surely that's going to be the case. But with a lot of these like remasters, like The Last of Us just came out part two, they add additional content to it to kind of give you the reason to purchase it again. So I wonder if they're going to do that again with this one. But then what else could they really add to it, you know?
Update, give me more Peter Stormare.
True.
Yeah.
And it
you
is
can
good
flesh out the choices and stuff.
The PC release too. And it means you can probably like play it with mods. Like, you could be Shrek running around.
Have a Pokemon mod. Nintendo will be knocking at your window
just
again.
Just double checked. They are they're rumored to be making a Scream game, which I think would be brilliant if they could do that. As much as I've not really liked the recent Scream movies, I think if they did that and leaned into the 90s and early 2000s-ness of it all, that would be cool. So maybe this is just a little small in-betweeny project while they're working on that before a potential reveal. I don't know.
They've kind of been doing that, like most of their games are, like, you know, slasher 90s stuff anyway, especially in terms of The Quarry. Like, I mean, how over the top that thing gets and how much fun it is. I wasn't a huge fan, Josh loved it, but it's like, it goes for it. I love that it exists. I love that Supermassive are able to do these projects. I do think it's interesting, though, like, thinking about where Sony's at, like the Jim Ryan era, like I said, he's about to step down. But another thing he greenlit was the idea of Sony Pictures and having the Sony PlayStation, the logo, PlayStation logos thing in front of things. We got it with Uncharted, Gran Turismo. There's a God of War TV show next, or maybe this year, but coming soon. Twisted Metal's out. Like, a lot of that cross-media stuff was him, or under his wing, anyway. And it's interesting looking at, like, that idea of, like, well, we have a movie coming out, so we'll remaster it. And it's like we have, with Last of Us, like we have a season of TV, so we'll remake it again. And it's like, they makes all the business sense. But I'm just, it's interesting looking at them doing this. And it's like, I didn't know a single person who saw Gran Turismo. but it kind of felt like that in some way was when he existed to bolster Gran Turismo 7 sales. And it's like, I'm just interested in this era of Sony. going forward, where everything is branded. Like that idea of like, don't do another original thing like The Quarry, make it Scream, and then we can do some sort of movie thing for it.
The thing that I was just about to say, and I've corrected myself before saying it, but I'm going to share this thought process anyway. It's like, it's weird that we're reliving past successes so quickly, but Until Dawn is nearly 10 years old.
It will be next year.
Which is stupid.
Horrifying.
God damn it.
Stupid time. Stupid father time. Idiot. Yeah. But next year's going to be Witcher 3, Metal Gear 5, Fallout 4. Just all of it, mate.
Oh, I'm dying.
He's dying. But we'll see how that thing shakes out. I don't know when the Until Dawn movie, if it has begun filming or not, but I'm sure there'll be more updates across the year. And there's a Sony State of Play been rumoured for a little while anyway. So we'll see. Next item down is that there was a Damian Wayne Batman game in production, according to voice actor Josh Keaton, who did multiple sessions for it before cancellation. Me and you did a little news on this the other day.
No!
we'll break some stuff down. But WB Montreal moved on to making Gotham Knights, but Keaton said that the game itself was not going to be set in the Arkhamverse. It was a totally different thing. He did say the game would have featured the Batcycle, which was then, it was shown in the concept art, and then it popped back up in Gotham Knights. And then we also had it in the Gotham Knights, in the cancelled game's concept art, we got to see a version of Batman with a beard. There was a Batman Beyond style costume. There was a whole Rogues Gallery various villains in there, Poison Ivy, Two-Face. It seemed like they were really far along, and they're doing voice work for it. Jason Schreier from Bloomberg got out there and said that the game wasn't cancelled due to things leaking earlier, which is what Keaton initially said. But either way, we had a game in production quite far along that would have been what a lot of people wanted before it was scrapped and the team moved on to Gotham Knights. You and have you recovered yet, mate?
Oh, no. I'm never recovering from this. I went into it in the news video that we did the other day, which was recorded before the Schreier clarification broke. But this is, like, if you would have asked me... If I had the ability to make a Batman game, I would have given you two options. I would have gone, well, either I want it to be Terry McGinnis and Batman Beyond, and we do the whole Neo-Gotham thing, or we do the Grant Morrison post-apocalyptic Damian Wayne future Batman game. And it seemed like... So this is basically my dream Batman game that was canned here. The concept art looks absolutely stunning. When that leaked in 2019, we know that Warner Brothers Montreal were working on this game from about 2014 to 2016, I believe, is the time frame that was originally given, and it was cancelled in 2016 or 2017.
2016.
Yeah. And then, there was that initial leak about the plot and then what they were working on. Then in 2019, we got that concept art. Yeah, no, it's just, it's gutting that this does not happen. And as much as I enjoy Gotham Knights, I think, that's such a testament to Montreal as a studio that I feel like they were always seeking the unique path forward for DC and putting their own stamp on it. Like, Damian Wayne Batman game is a completely unknown quantity for most people back when it was being worked on. Obviously, there's a movie coming out with him starring in the new DC universe or whatever. And then to do Gotham Knights, which is a Batman game without Bruce Wayne mostly, that to me is diving into what I want to see in my superhero stories. I'm still gutted about this. You shared another bit of concept art with me this morning just to torture me some more. It just looks like this really cool post-apocalyptic escape from New York, kind of no man's landy, Metal Gear almost was like a feat vibe that I got from it at times as well. It just looks like the Batman game that I would have done, and it does render that contrast between, where Montreal's headspace was for the future of this series or the future of DC IP and video games and where we're at now with Suicide Squad, which is, trading on recent things, is basically shoehorning the DC brand into a genre where it does not make sense. I don't care how many times I'm being told it does, it just doesn't. I'm still mad as
mad as hell,
and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Dan, take your thoughts on this. You're a big old Batman man.
It's such a shame that we never got this. And when I played Gotham Knights, I didn't really like vibe with it, and just to know that this is what we could have had instead of that, it pains us deeply. And you said the other day, was the Superman game like that didn't exist?
That was always a myth.
Was that a whole thing?
That was James Sigfield had that rumor in 2019, I believe. And then I think Schreier mentioned when they were doing the clarification for all the Suicide Squad backlash that was made up. But I would not be surprised if the Superman game was pitched. And we don't know what Warner Brothers Montreal are working on currently. They've had two games in development, one concurrently with Gotham Knights before that release. So maybe that could be Superman. Yeah. I don't know.
So I want them to move away from like the Bat family and the Bat verse, because there's all these other characters like featured in DC that have such like rich histories and like would make for incredible games. Like imagine a Green Lantern game, Ewan. Like,
oh,
a good Green Lantern game.
Green Lantern could be Green Lantern. And I'm not even like a massive Green Lantern guy, but Green Lantern should be DC Star Wars. You know, the mythos is so expansive and epic. There's no reason why you couldn't do a really fun spacefaring GL game. I agree with you. As much as I would have wanted this, I do think there is, you know, the element of bat fatigue too, which again is further rendered by Suicide Squad, which even though it pulls from the Justice League, it's still got a lot of bat focus going around. You know, Riddler's back. You know, it's Harley again. You know, they're bringing Joker in with the season pass afterwards. So
Joker.
Yeah.
We'll get to Suicide Squad in a sec. I think, yeah, for the Batman stuff, that idea of like, what the hell do you do with the franchise at this point? We mentioned it a little bit on the news, but I feel like it's like right now, if they did like an Arkham style game with that kind of combat, does that immediately feel too tight?
No.
Like, how do you sort of.
No,
right.
No, I'm fully. Like, it's one of those where, like, I think Marvel's Spider-Man 2 is a really good example of this, because obviously that game got criticized for not. It's basically the first, again, but more polished, flashier, bigger. Mm. I would have been fine. You could call this lazy or whatever, but I would have been fine with Rocksteady or Warner Bros. Montreal innovating on that formula and going further. I think it's one of those where, with this, the Damian game not being set in the Arkhamverse, it was probably going to have a new combat system. Maybe it would have been along the likes of what we got in Gotham Knights. I'm not sure, but I liked Gotham Knights' combat for what it was, apart from the weird gear system, which was bizarre. So, yeah, I think there are ways to go beyond that, and I do think you can make the argument that the Arkham formula has grown a little bit stale. You know, with Spidey's combat in particular, it's very much that dodge, you know, counter-attack, attack, you know, aerial movement or whatever. But there are ways to improve on that, and I feel like if you look at, there's a reason why people are still sharing gameplay clips of Arkham Knight's open world, is because even though that game came out in 2015, it still looks absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it looks
unbelievable. And people are still craving an open world Batman experience, which Gotham Knights delivered mostly, but obviously with some caveats. So, yeah, I mean, I think for me, if you literally go on Twitter right now and type in Batman Beyond game, you get hundreds and hundreds of results of people being like, why haven't we gotten a Batman Beyond game? Why haven't we gotten, you know... It, for me, this is one of the most no-brainer concepts ever. And I would love to see it happen. But as is the case with a lot of DC over the last 10 years, it's very much moving away from the company that captured my imagination when I was a kid. And that's not me being, you know, having the nostalgia goggles on or anything. I just think the thing that is drawing people into DC... it has diverged from what I like about DC at some point over the last 10 years, where it moved more into action-oriented, we're just going to focus on dark edginess and not the sincere kind of character-driven stuff that I was endeared to, is stuff like Batman Animated Series, Batman Beyond, Justice League. Mm-hmm. So that's my little rant. I just think I would love to see more of this, but in the right hands and with a studio that is going to aim for the stuff that I love about those characters.
Until both of you said, I didn't even know you could do a Star Wars with Green Lantern stuff. Like, the fact that is there kind of speaks to that wider reality of, like, the average person or the average, like, casual comic fan or whatever isn't aware of the possibilities of the other franchises. DC feels like Batman or Superman or potentially Suicide Squad, and that's kind of all they're leading with.
It's such a shame that, though.
Yeah. And it's like none of them seem to be working.
Like, not to cut you off, but even with Suicide Squad, you can say that it's limited there. Like, it is, like, they're going up against the Justice League. They've got Brainiac as the villain, really cool Superman thing, but the most we're getting out of that is Elseworlds multiverse stuff in the season pass after the fact. There's so much more scope to make that more epic. I would kill for a New Gods game, for instance. Now, that is DC Star Wars, like Jack Kirby's thing that he did after he left Marvel. You have Darkseid, you have everything going on there, which you could do as Superman as well. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like they're going for the most boring, most brand market researched thing.
Definitely.
But I don't know. It's a shame for me. My instincts tell me that a Damian Wayne game would have been cancelled because it was Damian Wayne and that it didn't have enough Bruce Wayne in it. So, because at least with Gotham Knights, you have recognizable IP like Robin, Nightwing, Batgirl.
The thing is, like, you could have done the whole older Batman thing. If the concept art was true, then assumedly you would have had Kevin Conroy voicing him, or maybe is it Roger Clark who did him?
It was Roger Craig Smith, but this was non-Arkham, so I think they probably would have gone with the new VA as well. Yeah.
But it's like, still, you could have potentially had that, and it would have been a great little passing of the mantle. But you know, you could have then
Troy Baker in.
Yeah, exactly. I would totally have Troy Baker back in again. He was Bruce in the Telltale Batman.
Yeah, he was.
But yeah, it's just a weird state of affairs. I think there is a bigger problem with DC overall. Like, the more you two describe it, whenever an actual fan of DC describes it, I'm like, oh, that's not at all how it comes across to me.
it's the most frustrating thing. Like, it's generally, the reason, and it's a shame because there is a fandom of DC people out there who do like the crap, and I'm not being that to like dunk on people's taste. I know that people really got into DC through stuff like the New 52 and, you know, Snyder's films in particular as well, but that is just so far removed from the bulk of the history of that mythos and what really drew me in, that it's frustrating. And again, last thing, Scott, watch Batman Beyond.
I'm totally gonna. Dan Durkin, do you recommend Batman Beyond?
Have you never seen Batman Beyond?
I've not, but apparently it's really, really good. I've seen bits of it.
It's like, really good.
I was like a Batman animated fan growing up, but I never...
Same people,
I was
same universe.
Yeah, I was at that age where I was like, oh, I'm not going to... I'm growing out of this. I'm going to go play Pokemon, apparently.
Batman has a gun in the first episode.
I'm back in. It's the Pal World cell. I'm back in. You got me there. Let's talk about Suicide Squad stuff to round things out. They've been talking about season pass stuff, Ewan, some sort of madness.
So the new Suicide Squad Insider came out earlier this week. I believe it was on Monday, which went into the post-launch content plans. They've confirmed we're going to be getting 4 seasons of stuff, which, you know, is going to span different... They're calling it Elseworlds. They're basically going to be adding new characters from different DC dimensions. So the first big reveal is Elseworlds Joker. They showed off some gameplay of him where, you know, he's young. He looks like a Yassified Joker, if you guys remember what Yassification was.
I actually quite like the, like, if it was just in isolation, the idea of, like, because they say, oh, they're channeling, like, vaudevillian roots, and he's a more showy kind of Joker. Like, I like the idea of, like a I don't know, zoo lion tamer style Joker. Like, fine, but it doesn't fit
the
here.
Movement looks fun. I don't like that he's stolen Penguin's gimmick, though. Like, if you're going to give an umbrella to someone, like, come on. And also, you know, someone who likes the OG Suicide Squad comics, Joker was never a member of the Suicide Squad, so this just feels like another kind of wish you horning in a thing because we want to do it, not because it makes sense for the brand or whatever. But yeah, they're going to get 4 seasons worth of content, 3 new playable characters. I believe a couple of those have leaked, one of whom I think is going to be Deathstroke in the final season. You're going to get different episodes, themed DC villain weapons, like from stuff like Two-Face and Scarecrow. You're going to get new boss fights, new Riddler stuff, and new different environments. The ones that they've shown off, they're going to have like an Arkham Asylum Fortnite map, a new like Joker's like thing going on. And they also revealed that Jason Isaacs is voicing Brainiac. By and large, yeah, no, it's what you're... They're expecting 4 seasons worth of content to come out over the next year, all free apart from premium cosmetics. So... Yeah, and they showed off a bunch of the cosmetics as well, which didn't really light my soul on fire either. So that's it on the Suicide Squad Insiders, I believe. The game comes out February 2nd, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's pretty soon. I'll be amazed if they'll make it to 4 seasons. I don't know. Part of me says, I was going to say I'll be amazed if they make it to 4 seasons, because the Avengers game barely lasted. Well, it went offline last year, so it's just gone now. But I guess in total, that was like 2 and a bit years.
They're guaranteeing 4 seasons, but I believe that there have been leaks that, you know, there are plans to continue it afterwards if it is successful.
They've also said they're patching it to make it offline, to remove the whole online thing. It was like, we're going to put a patch out post-launch that'll mean you can just buy it and play it offline. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, do you want me to get it and consume it and be done, or do you want me to get it and play it forever? Like, what are we doing? It's kind of both.
It depends on how much you like shooting those big purple glowy spots on the enemies. Like, how much do you see yourself doing that?
I don't see myself playing this.
It's just... It's one of those where I feel like, again, like I've gone on about it so many times over the years I've been here. Like, Batman Arkham is without a doubt, literally apart from just career-wise, one of the most important things that ever happened to me as a person. And the fact that I can be sitting here talking to you guys right now in a job where I get to talk about video games and play them and discuss them, and I can say with my whole chest that I'm not sold on a new Batman Arkham game.
Crazy.
Like, that is baffling to me. Like, that is truly baffling to me. And, you know, as much as, like, it seems as if this was the game that Rocksteady wanted to make, given from, you know, what I'm hearing from the devs over on Twitter and stuff, and what has come through in the Suicide Squad Insiders, for me, this is not... In no way was this ever the logical move to do after Arkham Knight, and for it to have taken 9 years is also just staggering to me. Like,
just painful.
Are a lot of people who I think will enjoy Suicide Squad if what you're after is a shooty, jumpy game. But for me, the emphasis on when having played the alpha, it's one of those games where if you think of when you played Batman Arkham, the beauty in that game really came out when you stopped to take it in the atmosphere. You'd like perch on a rooftop and really just soak it up, listen to the villain, listen to the thug conversations, listen to broadcasts, listen to interview tapes, whatever. There's a bunch of collectibles in Suicide Squad, but the game is built on keeping you constantly moving. And to me, that is not what I'm here for. It's really frustrating. I'm going in with as big an open mind as possible, and I think it's important that you don't review a game on the basis of what you wanted instead of what the game actually is. But having played the alpha, and for what it is, I did not find the shooting gameplay fun. I didn't find the maneuver, the traversal features fun. The writing is impeccable and the presentation is brilliant. And it's genuinely laugh out loud funny. Like, it is genuinely really funny. And for someone who approaching DC, I don't want to see evil Superman. I don't want to be killing the Justice League. I hate this obsession with making all our heroes evil. But it, that side of it won me over. But on the gameplay side of things, it just comes down to, why have you given Captain Boomerang a gun? He's called Captain Boomerang.
It's not even a gun that fires boomerangs. It's just a standard gun. Dan Durkin, are you buying in?
No, absolutely not. I'm going to watch the cutscenes on YouTube when it's a little four-hour movie compilation thing, but yeah, definitely not touching this one.
Fair. I'm curious about I want to see what, how far they go with the concept of killing the Justice League. Like, obviously, there are various leaks. I've read bits and pieces of them. I'm not going to go into them now. But still, that general idea of killing the Justice League seems like it's something that they've, they're committing to. And it's like, I want to see how that goes. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to see how that goes. It doesn't seem like, it seems like there's various ways that could have gone. So I'm just, I don't know, man. I feel like when you were saying before about like that feeling of something big's coming up, you were previously invested in the IP, and now it's coming out and you just feel nothing. I have that now with Marvel, Star Wars, Game of Thrones. Just throw Arkham on the pile. Like, it's exhausted, it's tired, it's been milked dry. And I needed to step away.
Can you even say it's been just milk dry? Like, we've not had anything in 9 years. This is more like they forgot about it and let the corpse wither for a little bit. And now they're trying to perform CPR on the corpse, but they've actually swapped the body and now it's a completely different thing.
Trying to convince us that the corpse has still got some movement in it. I say it's been milk dry because I remember the conversations at the time when Origins came out and it was like, oh my God, another one. And then Arkham Knight, and it was like, oh my God, another
Justice
one.
For Arkham
it's like,
Origins.
When you look back on it, yeah, you look back and it's nowhere near the rollout of various franchises, the franchise fatigue we've got with bigger things now. But yeah, overall, Arkham Origins, very, very good for the worth shouting something out.
Where's the remaster? Where's the remaster, eh? Where?
Where's the acknowledgement from Rocksteady's side? They did the end credits, not even mentioning it. Asylum City at night, according to them. Anyway, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Dan Durkin.
Boy.
Joined by you, Patterson.
Wild Country, Gordon's favourite tobacco.
We'll catch you all very soon.
Goodbye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.